live from Sydney, Australia, exclusively on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, this is Wrestling's Week That Was. Here is your host, Joel the Man O'Brien.
Well, hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling's Week That Was. I am Joel the Man O'Brien, co-editor of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, coming to you like I always do from the land down under, Sydney, Australia. And joining us, like he does every single Saturday afternoon, is my friend and other co-editor of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, Aaron Ramadanov. And Aaron, what's going on? And are you ready to get into a massive, massive week of pro wrestling news?
I'm always ready. I'm a little under the weather today, so excuse the nasally voice, but yeah, I'm ready to go.
Oh, you sound good. It's an hour and a half show, but I'm sure you'll stick with it and be all right. But we have, as I just said before, we have so much to cover today. Like, literally, this show is overflowing with important stuff that I have no idea how we're going to fit it in into an hour, hour and a half. But we're going to definitely try. Sting has finally, the man they call Sting, has finally debuted in WWE. Like, was this as impactful as it should have been? Or we'll definitely have answers to that question forthcoming. Survivor Series is in the books, and the Authority is no more. So we'll definitely be breaking down what's to come in regards to WWE Creative and where they should go. CM Punk, during the week, out of nowhere, broke his silence on Colt Cabana's podcast and talked about everything that's happened since breaking up in January and more. And we'll definitely into that in our podcast of the week section of the show. But of course, we'll be talking one of the worst Raws in recent memory. Obviously, we have a little bit of differing opinions, me and Aaron, but we'll be talking about that, NXT, SmackDown, and so much more. But before we delve into this week's hot topics, remember, we are currently on iTunes and Stitcher as we speak. So if you're looking for a practical way to help the show and stay in touch with us on the PWP Radio Network as a whole, download the podcast app on your smartphone and subscribe to PWP Radio Network. And you can do that by just putting that into the search bar or actually typing in Wrestling's Week That Was. And you can click and subscribe to us. And by clicking once, you can stay in touch with everything that we do. And it helps us out immensely. Very quick plug on my other show, Wrestling's Rope Break. My current interview with Diamond Dallas Page is up on PWP Radio right now. Really great just chatting, sitting down and talking with Diamond Dallas Page about his run in WWE, his current career with DDP Yoga. Will DDP Yoga be making an appearance on the WWE's Performance Center training schedule? Tons of little tidbits about what he thinks about current WWE product. So much stuff to really kind of sink your teeth into. So head on over to Wrestling's Rope Break and check out my interview with Diamond Dallas Page. It was a lot of fun to do, and we've got some more interviews upcoming. And I think, Aaron, you're going to be involved in some of those down the line?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, we've got a couple in the works right now, so we'll see if we can get some final dates on those.
Yeah, maybe by the end of the year. If not, the new year is going to be bringing a whole new version of Wrestling's Week That Was and Wrestling's Rope Break. Obviously, as we get close to the end of the year, me and Aaron will kind of divulge what the hell I am talking about. Now, also, Aaron, there's a ton of articles up on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Obviously, with the CM Punk interview breaking over the week, there's so much content to kind of sink your teeth into on the main site.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got so many, especially CM Punk stuff, like you mentioned. We've got about two or three CM Punk articles in the works. Two are actually posted right now from our own Cal Wiggins and JCD John. So we've got a bunch of stuff up. I mean, we've got those two for CM Punk. We've got other stuff like the TNA. If you want coverage on the TNA move, Wrestling Powerhouse is the way to go, because we've got about five articles up on the TNA move and a bunch of different opinions on it. And, you know, that's always good to have a bunch of different opinions from, of course, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. And, you know, I always say that you know, PWP, there's no other website like it, honestly. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a part of it. We dish out so much original content a week that it's almost unheard of. And, you know, I really am just, if you're not subscribing or you're not, you know, going over every single, at least day, once a day to look up all the articles, you're really missing out on a bunch of great content.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many different opinions, as you said, and so many different writers that write regularly now, going into leading into January, where, like, you know, WWE's products picking up, and there's so much more eyes on the product. And yeah, we've got a really good writing team that's very varied in all their opinions. So if you want some information, especially on that TNA move to Destination America happening next year, tons of information about that and opinions. So head on over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com to get your fix on just good old-fashioned pro wrestling editorials, because I think that's what we specialize in on the site. So yeah, definitely check it out. And personally, I've been a little bit dormant on the article writing side, but come next week, I've got two articles in the works that hopefully should entertain you guys. So look out for that. Okay, so let's just get quickly into the top news of the week. Sting has finally arrived in WWE. He's been one of the most sought after characters since the end of WCW, and he's been completely in the shadows when it's come to when he's going to make his WWE debut. He came and appeared evolving the WWE 2K15 game, and now he has been seen on WWE television for the first time, and having him involved in such a monumental impact angle, being the end of the Authority. Aaron, what's next for Sting? What do you think we go from here?
Well, if you asked me that question on Sunday night, I would have assumed he would be appearing on Raw. Of course, that wasn't the case, and we barely got any mention of him the next night. But as far as his debut goes, I think it was really well executed. I think, most people were expecting it. A lot of people, you know, throughout the week were hearing that Sting was going to appear and that he was going to have a major role in the Survivor Series. Many didn't believe it, you know, obviously, because we've heard it a bunch of times that Sting's going to debut here and there. So it was a nice little surprise. A lot of people complained, you know, in particular our own Bill Shannon. He was very upset about the outcome of the Authority angle and how they decided to implement Sting into the main event. And, you know, I thought it was just a cool historic moment. You know, no matter if you liked it or you didn't like it, you're able to say, I saw Sting debut for the first time in WWE, and no matter what he looked like, a lot of people were bashing the way he looked. He kind of looked old and stuff, but, you know, I think those people just really need to get over it, because it was just a cool moment. And as a wrestling fan, you want those cool moments. You want those cool surprises. I thought the touch on his entrance music was really cool, that they kind of made it their own, and they didn't use any WCW or anything like that. They kind of made it their own kind of music. And I think Triple H sold it very well. I thought their interaction was really cool. And of course, you know, we were left with Sting walking out of the building with Dolph Ziggler and the Authority ending. So I thought, you know, the final booking for that sequence was very well done, and it kind of saved the pay-per-view in a whole, because, you know, the pay-per-view wasn't really going too well up until the main event. And I think Sting and that main event stole the show.
Yeah, obviously we'll be getting to Survivor Series and the breakdown of what worked and what didn't in a few minutes' time. But in regards to Sting's appearance, I don't think you could have had a more impactful debut than have Sting have a hand in the Authority's demise. If you look at this old-fashioned pro wrestling booking, and obviously it looks like they're going to be going towards Sting and Triple H at WrestleMania, not Sting versus The Rock, like as was predicted on that SmackDown special a few months ago. But which I'm kind of fine with if it's going to be Sting versus Triple H at WrestleMania, because the issue has been established. Sting has had a hand in completely removing Triple H from power. If they're smart, they'll keep Triple H away from that kind of situation where he regains his power. But yeah, I thought it was a very impactful way to end the show. Crowd reaction was fantastic. St. Louis was great all night, and they just got even better during that great main event. And now it's like a very much a wait and see of when we're going to see Sting again. I'll be getting into my particular thoughts on Raw and the absolute mistreatment of the great work that was done in that pay-per-view main event. And again, in a few minutes' time. But as far as Sting goes, I think it's going to be a very exciting time going into WrestleMania. And as I plug every single week, I'm going to be there live in Santa Clara to see, I guess, Sting versus Triple H. Do you think that's the match that we're going to see at WrestleMania, Aaron?
I'm not so sure they can stretch it out that long. I mean, I think Triple H will be back soon, and Stephanie McMahon, I think they're really setting up John Cena or WWE to ask them to come back because, you know, I think obviously, in my opinion, I think they're going to have something where each week there's going to be a new GM and there's going to be chaos and, you know, John Cena might, you know, reinvoke the authority. Who knows? But I don't see them stretching it out all the way into WrestleMania. I could see Royal Rumble maybe. Or the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, it's still undetermined what that pay-per-view is going to be called or what the stipulation for that pay-per-view is. I really think that they want to do Sting and Taker. I think people want to see Sting and Taker. Maybe they can do Triple H and Sting at 31 and then maybe save Sting one more time for 32 with Taker and have Taker take a year off. From WrestleMania, who knows? But I don't know if they can stretch it out all the way into WrestleMania 31 as of right now.
I think that 3 minute stare down. Yes, it was 3 minute stare down between Triple H and Sting at Survivor Series. Selling that moment, not just the fact that Sting was in the ring in a WWE ring, is that the fact that Sting was in the ring with Triple H. I just feel from the monumental. Like emotion surrounding that moment, I just see that being the WrestleMania match. And yes, well, how the hell are they going to draw it out? Hey, if they keep Sting off television like they have last week and do the same thing like they've done with Brock Lesnar, maybe they can draw it out to a WrestleMania match. As far as Sting goes physically, he's 55. You know, he's like obviously from his TNA run, he's not getting any better in the ring. And I think it's a real discredit to like the future of Sting if they put him in two matches leading up to WrestleMania. A match leading up to WrestleMania and then having the WrestleMania payoff match. I think you keep that main event special, you keep Sting's in-ring debut special, and you have it at WrestleMania, because I just think if you put him in the ring first at Royal Rumble or something like that, it's going to lose a lot of his luster, because Sting right now at age 55, he can move, but he's nowhere near the Sting of old. So I think you got to keep that special to a degree. But very quickly, we'll go straight into the Authority, because the Authority is no more. After almost a year of being on television, being the prominent thing on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown and all of WWE's programming, it's broken up. But at the same time, Survivor Series broke a little bit of an interesting tidbit that John Cena is now going to be the only person that can bring the Authority back. That's obviously, you know, hinting that John Cena is going to bring back the Authority. Did you get that kind of vibe too, Aaron? Because I freaking hope to God that this doesn't happen.
Well, you know, the fantasy booker in me, you know, kind of is happy about that because, you know, that's the perfect angle for a John Cena heel turn, of course, and everyone wants it and everyone, you know, clamors for it. You know, but I doubt that happens, obviously.
It's not going to happen.
I do see that, you know, maybe Cena brings him back, like I said before, where, you know, each week is chaos, each week is a different general manager, and it's just getting crazy, and, you know, maybe he says, well, at least with the Authority, it was kind of civil here, but, you know, I don't really see any reason why he would do it. That's the thing. Like, I think he'd been sold by intelligence in a way of, you know, they built it up to be, well, John Cena wants to get rid of the Authority so bad, and this is it, this is winner takes all, and, you know, throwing that little stipulation in there is kind of throws everyone for a curveball. And the one thing I noticed, and I don't want to jump ahead to Raw, but when Triple H, Stephanie, and Vince were leaving, Vince kind of said, you're going to make this up. You're going to fix this. And you know, that kind of hinted at something. And even when Triple H got into the car, he kind of looked back, and not with a smirk, but kind of like a look into the distance, I guess, and kind of went to the car. So I think there's something hinting at their return in the very near future. I don't know if John Cena is going to be the one to bring him back, but we'll see what happens.
I really hope not. I mean, like, I think what you just talked about, that little moment with Triple H, I mean, I think it's the fact that Triple H will be back and Stephanie McMahon will be back in some way. I just think they just really discredit, again, WWE just really discredits their own stipulation to this match. Triple H and Stephanie McMahon can come back. I mean, like, the fantasy booker and me, when looking at the situation of how they're going to bring back Triple H to fight Sting, why can't we just have Triple H come back, like just as a rebel? Like in his trench coat and like he used to be, no suit, nothing, and like have Stephanie kind of dressed the same, and they come back and they just attack Sting or something like that and set up the WrestleMania match and kind of cause their own anarchy and use that as a point, like to say, oh, we're going to keep destroying the show, I'm going to keep ruining the show, I'm going to keep destroying the lives of these people until you put me back into power. And I don't know. At the same time, I just don't think they just need to be put back in the power. I'm sick and tired of just authoritarian storylines where someone's fighting against the system. It doesn't always need to be like that. But obviously we'll get into Raw and how that kind of plays out, because we didn't really have an authority. Well, we kind of did with Daniel Bryan. Yes, Daniel Bryan returned as well to WWE television for two shows, Raw and SmackDown. But we'll get into that soon. Obviously, in other news, powered by CoolWrestlingNews.com, Aaron, what have we got this week? Apparently, Ishitacha is in a bad way because of a move that seems to be injuring a lot of people this year.
Well, once again, AJ Styles has broken another neck with the Styles Clash. Yoshitatsu apparently took the Styles Clash very wrong. He, instead of tucking his head out, he tucked it in when he was going down for it, and he broke two bones in his neck, apparently, and he's been hospitalized for the first time in his career, which was kind of interesting. He kind of mentioned on social media. And that kind of leads me to the question where, should AJ Styles stop using it? Should he kind of put that to the side and kind of maybe, only use it on special occasions, or only use it with people that know how to take the move, or should he do something differently with it? I have a whole article set up for tomorrow to publish where I'm going to be talking about that, and has the Styles Clash kind of become too dangerous for modern wrestling as we move toward, trying to make wrestlers safer. And with the Punk thing that we'll talk about later, where, there's no wrestling union like the MLB or NFL, we've got to try to protect wrestlers. Should moves like this be banned? Should they not be allowed to be used, similar to the pile driver head that's kind of been not outlawed, but, it's kind of an unspoken rule that, you shouldn't really be using the pile driver. So that only raises the question, should the Styles Clash kind of be taken out of this modern day wrestling?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, like, Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer he was a former wrestler, he wrestled for about, I think, 4 or 5 years. He's taken that move many times in some way, shape, or form, because, indie wrestlers usually rip off a lot of moves that they see the biggest stars use. And like, apparently, and I've heard AJ Styles comment. No, there was three people that were injured. There was Yoshitatsu, there was, I think it was Roderick Strong, and there was a UK wrestler. Now, I heard from an interview with AJ Styles, because I think, that's right, Brian Alvarez actually talked to AJ Styles and brought up the fact that that person was injured. And all he said was, like, listen, a lot of the times there's a, you have a discussion with the guy before your match, and he always asks, can you take my move? And he goes, if not, I'll explain what you can do, what you need to do with your head. And the English guy was like, I've been wrestling for X amount of years. I know how to take a Styles Clash. I know how to take this. And kind of like, punked out AJ to a degree. This is what I heard. And then obviously we know what the end result was. He took the Styles Clash and broke his neck. And then he went on Twitter and said, Styles is dangerous. I don't know. Like, the move has been, he's been using that move for so long, and, like, I don't know, like, this year's been a terrible year for that move, and maybe it comes down to the training of the wrestlers themselves. Maybe there's just not enough good pro wrestling training out there. Maybe not everyone's going to Lance Storm's school of wrestling training and getting the right education. Maybe that's a problem with this day and age, because, like, I don't know. Like, these people are just, like, maybe there's a lot of unsafe wrestling going out in the independent circuit. You see a lot of independent wrestling, Aaron, in the United States. What's the deal there? Are there a lot of safe wrestling, or you see a lot of, like, botched moves left and right?
Well, that kind of comes with indie wrestling. I mean, when you go to an indie show, you don't expect to see five-star wrestling with no mistakes. So that's just the way it is. That's why guys are paid to be, you know, big stars in WWE, TNA, ROH, sure. And not, you know, in the indies. But that's an interesting point because I actually went to AJ Styles' match last month where it was AJ Styles right. versus Matt Taven versus Evan Bourne. And AJ Styles attempted the Styles Clash to Evan Bourne, but never executed. It didn't happen. He went for it once. Evan Bourne got out of it. Happened again. He got out of it again. So, like you said, maybe backstage, you know, AJ asked Evan, you know, can you take my move? He said no, and they didn't do the move. So that's fine. I have no problem with that, and that should be the way it is. But, you know, and I don't want to accuse AJ of being out of shape or anything like that, but he's 37 years old. Maybe he can't execute the move as well as he used to when he was a little younger. I don't know why this year has just been awful. Maybe it's just bad luck. Maybe we're blowing out of proportion that, you know, this is just a bad year for AJ and his move. But if I'm AJ Styles, I could not live with myself knowing that I have broken or almost broken three people's necks with my move. I would take it out of – I would go out of my way to create a new move or outlaw my own move because I wouldn't be able to live with myself knowing that I've done that. You know, and I understand that, you know, someone can get injured with a suplex or a clothesline. I understand that. But the margin of error is far bigger with the Styles Clash. And I actually watched a video the other day as I was doing some research for the article I'm writing. You know, on WrestleTalk TV, they talked about one of the wrestlers, I forget his name. He was saying that a natural reaction, a natural instinct when you're in wrestling school is to tuck your chin. That's one of the basic first things you learn is to tuck your chin with everything. Now, of course, obviously with the Styles Clash, you're not supposed to tuck your chin. You're supposed to push your chin out, which is a complete contradiction to your training. So that's something, another piece of element, like you said, where, you know, can you take the move? If you can't take the move, make sure you let AJ know, I guess. But, you know, I don't know if the Styles Clash should be used anymore, considering the amount of injuries it's caused just this year.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to see if AJ keeps using the move and see what happens from this latest injury, see if he kind of changes his style. But in other news, about WWE wanting Raw and SmackDown to be equal shows, what does that even mean? What do you mean by equal shows?
Well, considering that SmackDown is going to be moving to Thursday nights in 2015, apparently WWE wants to kind of feature bigger storylines on SmackDown. Now, I'm not sure if this means brand extension where there's two separate rosters again, and if that is the case, and I don't know why they would do that because their roster is not big enough to do that. But I think what I understand by that, what that means is that they want to feature just bigger storylines. They want things to happen. For example, this week, A New Day debuted on SmackDown. I think they want something like that where every week there's something on SmackDown that you have to watch. You have to go watch SmackDown to see it. And I'm all for that. I always get really annoyed when something big happens on SmackDown and then they just end up showing it on Raw anyway. They end up just if you do that, there's no urgency to go watch SmackDown if they're just going to show you what happened the next week on Raw. So I'm all for that. I'm all for having two shows that are kind of your flagship shows and have them be balanced, have a main event, but problem with having SmackDown as an equal show is it's not live. That's the biggest problem with that show. It's not a live show. You know, live programming is the lifeblood of wrestling, especially with WWE and of course Nitro and all that stuff. So I think that might be a big problem with trying to do that. If you want to make an equal show, you'd have to go live with SmackDown, and that would mean Monday and Tuesday back to back, and I don't think WWE would be up for that. I mean, they're up for that here and there, you know, on special occasions, but I don't think they'd be up for that on a weekly basis, and I think that, you know, trying to make these shows equal with one of them being taped isn't going to work.
No, I'm all for just SmackDown in general being a show that has more happening. I've been an advocate for that since I started reviewing SmackDown. The show, like, there's so many times where the show is pointless and there's reason to watch it. You may have your one show here and there that's a good show, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, it didn't really even say anything about the characters, the storylines, and whatnot. And, I'll be getting into SmackDown this week in regards to New Day and how, yes, they should be doing every week. They should be doing something big every week that makes you want to tune in. As far as, like, live compared to taped, again, Aaron, you're kind of reading my mind here, because I will be definitely talking about that in regards to the bad of SmackDown, because that it sucks the life out of the show, the way the show can be edited sometimes. And, like, if they can do live back-to-back, I'm all for that, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see if this is going to work. I mean, hopefully this rumor is true, because anything to make WWE's programming more relevant, I'm all for. So, again, we'll have to kind of wait and see what happens there. And Vince McMahon. Now, obviously, it was announced on the pay-per-view, and hasn't really been publicized that much, and that's Vince McMahon's appearance on the Stone Cold Steve Austin show.
Yeah, apparently the Steve Austin show is coming to the WWE Network. I don't know if, and a lot of rumors are kind of swirling that if this is just a one-time thing, or they're going to be bringing this back on a monthly basis or something along those lines. My only problem with this is it's produced by WWE. So, of course, some punches are going to be pulled. You wouldn't get this. A Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast on podcast1.com and a Stone Cold podcast on the WWE Network are two completely different things. On his own show where he's producing it, he doesn't have to listen to anybody. He doesn't have to pull any punches. On the network, I feel like he's going to have to. I mean, I don't know if they're going to let him, you know, ask anything. And, you know, there's been some speculation if Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to ask him about the CM Punk situation, and that would be gold. If we can get a live reaction from Vince McMahon on the CM Punk situation on the WWE Network, I mean, just imagine. I mean, that would be a huge breakthrough for the network. It would show a lot of fans that Vince is not afraid to, you know, be real or shoot, quote unquote. So, but then again, like I said before, I don't know if that's going to happen. I feel like they might pull punches here and not go all the way with this, and that's going to be a shame because, you know, they have a big opportunity here. If they decide to do this, you know, and have Steve Austin ask him anything he wants, that would be incredible.
Absolutely. Like, to combat the hype around CM Punk, there's one way to maybe put more focus on using the issue to kind of like boost WWE's situation in regards to the network. And that would be the way to do it, is to publicly and talk about CM Punk's situation. Like, that's the way to do it. Like, I'm very interested to hear Vince McMahon's candid views on this. But again, it's WWE who we're talking about. This is the same company that takes away signs that they don't really want, where they don't want any bad publicity against their name being shown. They like to filter everything on WWE television. And I don't know if they're gonna. I don't know if they're gonna have the balls to kind of do that. I hope they can produce a podcast on the WWE Network that kind of grabs everyone's attention. But yeah, I kind of agree with what you're saying as well. Like, how are they gonna do this podcast? Is it gonna be like a podcast that's gonna be like in a recording studio, but there's gonna be videos in recording studio? Like they do on radio shows sometimes. I don't know. I'm intrigued. But like, you know, Austin's been getting some good guests on his show, and he's always been wanting Vince McMahon on his show. But because WWE's got their kind of creative and production fingers in the pie here, so to speak, I don't know what kind of content we're going to get, because WWE has a habit of just kind of giving us content that doesn't really tell us very much. So we'll see what happens and see. I am interested. If you don't have the WWE Network, you should have it anyway. But this is a definite reason to kind of check it out, at least maybe just for a month if you're not impressed with everything else. So let's move on to Survivor Series, Aaron. I mean, like, what did we learn from Survivor Series this year? That's the way we break things down here on Wrestling's Week That Was, when we talk about pay-per-views. What did we learn? What were the lessons learned from Survivor Series? I just want to start with my first one. And that's that what did we learn? Well, WWE main events in 2014 can make and carry a show with its booking and its action. Now, I was very skeptical going into this pay-per-view that, and I'm never a big fan of pay-per-views being a one-match show. It should never, ever be like this. There should be interest and intrigue all up and down the card. There should be something that grabs you in every single way. And I really feel like over the last few months, WWE's kind of lost that a bit, and especially with this pay-per-view, which is mind-boggling as far as I'm concerned, because as I've discussed every single week, this show was meant to sell everyone on the WWE Network. And sure, yes, the main event did a great, tremendous job, almost in spite of the terrible television leading up to the event, because it has not been the best. It's been actually borderline terrible on some weeks. This match just completely encapsulated everything that will interest people. Like it had Sting returning, of course, as we discussed. Huge moment. You know, to be a part of that is what wrestling fans dream of being a part of. And they had Dolph Ziggler. Obviously, Aaron, we'll talk about that in a second. What we mean by Dolph Ziggler was such a big part of the show. Yes, he was a massive part of the show. Would you believe? That we had a Big Show heel turn in the middle of the match where he just completely turned on his team. We had Seth Rollins being like just an absolute prick throughout the whole match, having his involvement in nearly all the heel pinfalls. You know, Rusev being eliminated. So much drama and this is probably the quintessential WWE main event. If they can share a little bit of the energy down to the mid card, WWE would be on a winning formula. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. And I think, you know, and like you said, they've been doing this for the last couple of months as far as just trying to sell us on the main event and kind of just filling in the undercard as they go. And you know, we've made the point a couple of weeks in a row that, you know, for example, Wrestle Kingdom 9, New Japan Pro Wrestling, they have their pay-per-view, the card set up months in advance, whereas WWE, they kind of are kind of freelancing, and Vince kind of scraps things when he wants. He kind of plugs things here, and there's really no direction for any of the superstars up until maybe a week or two before the pay-per-view, sometimes on the pay-per-view itself. So, you know, like you said, right. I think they need to be a little more they need to be able to put a card together that, you know, invokes interest throughout. There's a little bit of something for everybody. There's just a nice collective feel to it. Like you said, this pay-per-view would have been dead in the water if the main event didn't steal the show, and it did. So good for them. But if it didn't, this pay-per-view would have bombed.
Yeah, I totally agree. At the same time, like, it kind of reinforces Vince McMahon's philosophy on like one match pay-per-views. Kind of their job, because obviously the reaction for what happened was monumental and it was great. You kind of hope that he does change his way of doing things, but you kind of think, well, it's shows like this where the main event was fantastic that it could stay on that track. But I mentioned Dolph Ziggler, Aaron. Now, mm-hmm. Dolph Ziggler, what a night for him. Explain why.
I mean, you know, I give props to WWE for this, where they had the confidence to give Dolph Ziggler his moment. They did just that. He, you know, he channeled his inner Shawn Michaels and came back behind and won the match. So, I mean, you know, even though he got help from Sting, it made Dolph Ziggler look like a big time star. I mean, you know, and this, I think this proves that WWE maybe starting to believe in Dolph Ziggler a little bit and saying that, you know, maybe we have something with him that we just haven't noticed yet, and maybe we should be noticing it now. So I think they've finally kind of given him his moment. And you've talked about this a bunch of times, where each superstar needs their moment to kind of shine. And this might be, you know, one of his greatest moments ever, alongside his WrestleMania 29 victory after the world title, the night after WrestleMania. So I think Dolph Ziggler kind of proved that he can be a main event star. He can be somebody that they rely on as far as being a draw or a big time star. So I was really happy with his booking on Survivor Series.
Yeah, and again, it's mind boggling again that they do this really up and down booking strategy with him leading up to this pay-per-view, where he's getting beaten up. He had some strong victories at the start, but you know, then he's still getting beaten up every single week and losing every single week again, and losing to Rusev, and you're just like, okay, Dolph Ziggler's back to being Dolph Ziggler. And then you watch this pay-per-view, and it's like the booking team is I'm going to be writing about this actually in an upcoming article. It's like WWE pay-per-views all year have been almost like a dangling carrot for something we want to see more of. And it almost feels like the show is written by someone completely different, like, especially when it comes to Dolph Ziggler. All of a sudden, like, it just like it clicked for Vince, and all of a sudden, like, it's like he's approving storylines where and like booking strategies where Dolph Ziggler's put over ridiculously strong. And like, Aaron, I think you kind of underplayed it a bit there. Like, this guy went 3-1, like he came back from a 3-1 disadvantage and won the match. And like, a lot of people have said, oh, well, Sting completely overshined Dolph Ziggler. Again, I'll talk when I get to Raw, maybe that's the case, but for Survivor Series. Sting came out, did what he needed to do. There was a complete like heel beat down on Ziggler. He was getting absolutely slaughtered out there. But the great thing is, leading up to like when it came down to him and Seth Rollins, he had a visual 1-2-3 on Seth Rollins where if the referee didn't get pulled out. That's booking strategy number one, why that was great. Second of all, when Sting came in and did what he needed to do and walked off, whose music did we hear at the end of the night that was playing over the speakers? Dolph Ziggler. Wasn't Sting, which was what they do sometimes when there's interference by a higher star or bigger star. They put the emphasis on the bigger star and have the other guy fade into obscurity in the back. In this situation, Dolph Ziggler's music was playing. There was a huge shot of him jumping in the crowd and celebrating on his own. John Cena came down, shook his hand, gave him a hug. You know, like that kind of stuff. Like, that's it's just like, again, it feels like this writing team is completely divided sometimes with the way they do their pay-per-views. But there were their fair share of negatives. And one thing I kind of learned from this pay-per-view, a solid build to a pay-per-view for particular characters doesn't always translate to an equal payoff. And what do I mean about that? I'm talking about Ryback. Now, Ryback was the focal point of this show. He was the character that was, or the performer that was going to dip the scales, so to speak, when it came to who, like, you know, whoever had Ryback on his side was going to be have a huge advantage. And that was the story they were doing the whole way through. But he was the first, wasn't he the first person that was eliminated in the match, Aaron? For Team Cena?
Yeah, I think he was the first for Team Cena. Yeah, he was the first person eliminated for his team. Yep.
Again, all these people. You have Eric Rowan. You have The Big Show. You know, like all these guys that could have easily been the first people eliminated. Like maybe Eric Rowan should have been eliminated first because, like, you know, really he was in a situation where he could have. Ryback was the first guy eliminated. Are you kidding me? Like, you put all this like good work into building the guy up, and he just gets beaten. I don't even think it was a finish. I think it was like a spine buster by someone, or I don't even know. But it was just like all the people to lose. I mean, like, again, I'm kind of nitpicking here in the main event, but that was my thing. But I think you weren't so happy with the finish to Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose on this pay per view, were you, Aaron?
I felt like it was just a letdown. I felt like, you know, they were having such a good match. I felt, and I think their psychology was so good. And even Dean Ambrose doing Bray Wyatt's kind of signature in the corner where he kind of goes like a spider or whatever, I thought that was really cool. And I just loved their interaction with each other in this match. I felt like it was had such a nice little flow to it. And then just to have, you know, ended in a DQ, I was just a little disappointed. I was obviously this feud has more to see, and there's going to be more to this feud, obviously, in TLC and maybe afterwards. But I just felt like it was unchoreographed. It felt just, especially afterwards, where Dean was, you know, bringing a table in, and then he brought a ladder in, and then he kind of stood on the ladder, and it looked like he was going to jump, but then he didn't. And he's like, it was just a lot of just mixed signals with this ending, and I just didn't feel it, you know, and I felt like Bray Wyatt needed to look strong here, and he didn't, and, you know, I understand that they want to kind of put Dean over in this situation, but I don't feel like he needed it as much as Bray, you know, coming back from being away for so long and losing so many pay-per-views, and just I felt like he needed to look strong, and he did not. So that was my biggest gripe for this match.
Yeah, it was a very finite ending to kind of the issue as well. Even though it kind of ended on a DQ, like it was very much like he got buried. He got completely buried in all these ladders and tables and chairs. And obviously, yes, that was the tie-in for TLC. But yeah, I didn't have such a big problem with it. I mean, like, obviously it leads to another match, and I knew that was going to happen going in. You just know. With like TLC happening, like on the horizon, where you know, obviously you're taking these feuds and you're adding stipulations to the feuds. It's just, it's organic that this is going to lead to a TLC. Well, I didn't think it was going to be a TLC match, but yeah, that's what we're going to get in 3 weeks. Well, less than 3 weeks now on the WWE Network. I think the match was good. I didn't really have, honestly, the DQ finishes that we've been seeing over the last few weeks, compared to those, this one didn't feel so bad. And I think the match, the quality of the match kind of helped it as well. But yeah, that was Survivor Series, everybody. Obviously, there's a lot of other stuff that we're going to have to get into. But Roman Reigns did an interview, and I think he's getting better. Damian Mizdow and The Miz are tag team champions. We'll be getting to that a little bit later on. But yeah. All in all, by the time we got to that main event, Survivor Series is definitely worth your time kind of checking out. So if you get the chance, check it out. So let's get into the Raw rundown for the week. I will go out on a limb and say that this show is easily one of the worst Raws I have seen in a long, long time. Aaron, first of all, just tell me what you think of it, thought about this show, because I think we have some slightly differing opinions, but I think it's good to get a positive opinion out before we hit a negative.
Well, you know, I felt like the show. And it's not that I liked the show in particular. Like, I felt like it was well-booked or anything like that. I just liked that for the first time in over a year, it's a positive show. You know, we had every week, you know, we had the Authority come out and do a promo. And it would, you know, it'd just be a very heel mood to the entire show. This was the first show in a long time where it felt like a good show. You had Daniel Bryan come out. You had him, you know, yes to the Authority in their faces, and it kind of rubbed it. And it just, it felt like it had a good positive feel to it throughout the entire show. It ended with a babyface win, you know, and I felt like, it just felt like they gave the fans a nice reward as far as the mood of the show. They gave them a nice reward for the year-long Authority angle. And I just felt like it just felt like a good show to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I think the great thing about this, about pro wrestling, is everyone's got a differing opinion on every single part of what we see on television, and I certainly have a different kind of feel on it. I mean, like, every single segment on this show just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, there was an exception, and I think Aaron, you're going to bring up that exception in your next point, but for me, I just all the great work that was done in that main event. You had so many things happening in that main event that made you want to see Raw. You couldn't wait to see Raw. Personally, I couldn't wait to see Raw. What's going to happen with the Authority out of power? What's going to happen with the Big Show now that he's turned heel? And of course, what is going to happen next week on next night on Raw when, like, because Sting is now back in WWE. Now, that's the first thing I want to say. Sting is back in WWE. This is not just a debut for someone, for a WCW star, like a Diamond Dallas Page. No offense, Diamond Dallas Page, or you know, like, or Lance Storm, or a Mike Awesome, or anything like that. Or even if they were put in prominent roles, you know, this is not the Shield debuting for the first time. I think the Shield got more attention the next night on Raw after their Survivor Series debut than Sting did. What do I mean by that? There was Triple H mentioned him briefly at the start. We got a good video at the start, and then I think Dolph Ziggler briefly mentioned him in the situation where he pretty much gave tribute to Sting and not to himself for going against the Authority 3-1 and winning the match. He pretty much, like, yeah. And then we had a few of the announcers just, like, oh, you know, mention it here and there. I wanted the whole show to be absolutely questioning why Sting was there. What's his motivations? We got none of that answered at all. All we got was that Sting was involved in the main event. We got no promo by Triple H saying he vows revenge on Sting, how he's going to get Sting, how he's going to make sure that Sting's life's a misery in WWE. There was no, absolutely no impactful follow-up to Sting coming into WWE, as far as I'm concerned. And that is such a monumental sin, and it discredits the great work that was done in that main event at Survivor Series. Because by the end of that show, it felt like just business as usual. And, like, speaking of the main event, you know, like, the main event of the show, like, what did you think of this fan voting thing, Aaron? Because, like, because that was the main event of the show. It was Dolph Ziggler and John Cena versus Seth Rollins in a 3-on-2 handicap match where the fans got to choose his partners. Can you just share a little bit of light on what was going on here, Aaron? Because it was just ridiculous.
Well, I think the motivation or the idea for this was, you know, having Daniel Bryan kind of give his power to the people and kind of giving a fan vote. And I think that was just the basic idea of that, as far as just having Daniel Bryan and being in charge and Daniel Bryan being a people person and wanting to, you know, give the power to them. So I think that's kind of the motivation as far as that goes. And as far as having the Stooges, J&J Security, Seth Rollins' tag team partners, I felt like that was just a simple, you know, giving Seth Rollins his due. You know, Seth Rollins has been protected by the Authority for so long. He's been, you know, their golden boy. He barely had, you know, and I think this maybe was just his final, you know, just giving him his payback or karma, you know. And maybe it should have been done a little better. Maybe, you know, he could have had some, you know, formidable tag team partners. But, you know, yeah. I don't know. I didn't really have a problem with the fan vote or Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury being involved in this main event.
I did, and I'll tell you why. Like, I'm fine with what every single thing you just said. It makes sense. Yes, I understand why the match existed. I understand why there was fan voting. But I don't understand why WWE even did this fan voting when every single segment where they were plugging this stupid fan voting situation where they were like, yep, choose C, which was the J&J Security option. And where the other options were pretty much going to empower Seth Rollins. Oh, we're gonna put him with Luke Harper and Mark Henry. Mark Henry and I don't know who the other one was. It doesn't matter.
Kane, it's like, I think, yeah.
What? Kane, there you go. Why would anyone in their right mind choose the heel to be in power in that situation? Why? Why? And furthermore, WWE was just like every single chance they got, they were like, yep, choose C. It's like, why not just ditch the fan voting and make the match and have Daniel Bryan make the match? If the plan was to make the whole situation a bullshit situation with Seth Rollins, why not have every single option be a situation where he's going to be disadvantaged? Like, it's just ridiculous. Put him up like him and Seth Rollins, Torito, and Hornswoggle will be one of the options or something like that, if that's your end goal. Don't just dumbify this whole, like, choosing an option where every other option is unfavorable. Like, it's just, it was so such a redundant storyline, a show-centric storyline. So it's like, oh, it was so predictable and so ridiculously stupid. And furthermore, talking about, like, discrediting the work that was done at Survivor Series, Dolph Ziggler, this 14-minute main event, getting the heat put on him by J&J Security, two geeks getting the heat off Ziggler, and then Dolph Ziggler doing the triumphant hot tag to Cena and Cena winning the match. It's like, come on, like, this is a geek team. Like, if he's getting the heat by Rollins, it would be a different story. But in the end, he's getting absolutely beaten up by Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury, who have been presented as geeks the whole time. Fuck this show, man. I hated this show. I really did. But there were some positives. Give us another positive, Aaron, because there was at least one that we both agree on.
Oh, I mean, this was my favorite part of the entire show. Big Show cutting a promo in the ring, very angry. And people were bashing Big Show, you know, and the big joke going around the internet is that, you know, he's turned heel about, you know, 150 times. But, you know, I feel like his promo was really good. And I really didn't expect Eric Rowan to come out, but he did. And I felt like Eric Rowan, with the mask, with his jumpsuit, with the Titantron now, the new Titantron he has, the new music, I just love everything about Eric Rowan. I'm going to plug myself again. I wrote a whole article on why he's a main event talent, and he deserves to be in that spotlight eventually. I'm so happy he gets to be under Big Show's wing in this feud. I'm so happy they get to interact with each other. And I'm very excited for an Eric Rowan push, because I felt like after Survivor Series, he was going to be pushed aside and kind of continue on his, you know, stupid little backstage segments, where, you know, now he's going to be in a pretty decent feud. I'm assuming we're going to get Eric Rowan versus the Big Show at TLC, maybe in a chairs match or something along those lines, or maybe just in a regular singles match. But I think they need to add a stipulation to that to catch everyone else's interest besides mine, because I'm perfectly fine in the Big Show and an Eric Rowan match. I just love Eric Rowan. He's one of my favorite wrestlers right now. He's one of my favorite talents. I think he's got so much potential. I think the character has so much potential. I compare him to a George the Animal Steel type, where he's a misunderstood, childlike character, where, you know, but when he's in the ring, he's a monster. I really like the Eric Rowan character a lot.
I can tell you really like him a lot. But
like it a lot.
I can tell. But I don't know, like, main event stature, we'll see. Like, he's still very, very early for that in that regard. But yes, I think the segment involving it was just perfectly set up. Big Show just did a tremendous promo that was just so heel in nature, that was just so articulate and so well done that you couldn't wait for someone to come out and beat the shit out of him. And it was Eric Rowan to kind of step it up. And Eric Rowan's mannerisms are coming along really, really nicely. He's got great facials, that hell, that beard is incredible. Like, you know, like, he's got a really great, unique look. And having him under Big Show's wing to kind of teach him how to be the giant going forward, it's going to be dividends. And of course, remember, I'm guessing the WWE wants you to forget this, but remember the tag team matches that Big Show and Mark Henry were having against the Wyatt family, and what Eric Rowan could do to Big Show? I'm pretty sure he body slammed the Big Show with ease. So that just shows you the guy is freakishly strong, and we're going to see some great big mean guy matches in the future. And yeah, just a well done segment, and the fans were behind Eric Rowan. They chanted his name. Great stuff. Like, and we're going to get into SmackDown later on, and we also saw some really great stuff there in regards to the feud continuing. But that is neither here nor there. But let's get straight into NXT, the NXT Weekly Awards. Thank God for this show, Aaron, because I tell you, this is another week, another monthly excellent edition of NXT. Just overflowing with positives. And sure, like, it wasn't the most groundbreaking show, but one thing I just loved about the show, before we get into the actual awards, was the fact that, like, they have, like, they announced the main event for NXT Our Evolution, NXT TakeOver Our Evolution, and they have a whole show based on the mid-card semi-main event matches. And they spent a whole hour building up that and putting a Sami Zayn and Neville on the back burner so they can give these other programs a chance to breathe. Like, this is unheard of when you think of it, the fact that the show is only an hour long. And, like, you know, if it was WWE up on the main roster, they'd be, like, freaking out. They're like, oh, we have to balance it all out. The main event's much more important, so we have to sacrifice the progression of the other storylines. But no, on NXT, they're like, we're just chillaxed. And they're like, yep, we've got all this time. We're going to spend a good hour building up the feuds that are going to, like, you know, be the foundation for the show. The Lucha Dragons got involved, villains got some great time, and that ending, that pull-apart brawl ending with the NXT locker room keeping the Ascension and Finn Balor and Kenta apart, awesome stuff. Like, that was such a great way to go off the show. We got a great Tyson Kidd, Finn Balor match, all these positives. I freaking love NXT. Thank God for NXT this week.
Yeah, amen to that. I mean, everything. And like you said, they kind of put the top storylines, you know, aside, and they really focused in on the mid-card and in the undercard. So, and also, I felt like there was a nice little mixture of wrestling and a lot of comic relief. I mean, I felt like Von Villain's, promo, the little skit they did from Enzo and Big Cass to Marcus Lee and Tyler Breeze. I felt like there was a lot of nice, you know, comic relief. And that's one of the key points I made to you is that was genuine comedy. That wasn't forced. It wasn't scripted. It like they didn't like sit in a room and say, oh, this would be funny. And they put it in there. This was all the talent in themselves being funny. It was Enzo and Cass doing their thing. It was Tyler Breeze, you know, calling Marcus Louis and Ugo and being hilarious. And you know, the Vaughn Villains in that skit. I mean, it was just all genuine, just funny stuff. And that's one of the things I wish they can translate over to Raw is, or SmackDown, is instead of forcing this thing that they think is going to be funny to actually letting the talent themselves do what they think is funny, and it translated perfectly on NXT.
Yeah, and just riding with it and seeing what the talent does with it. Because, you know, yes, even the Marcus Louis thing I was laughing at. And Tyler Breeze, like, the whole segment was fantastic. It was Tyler Breeze versus Marcus Louis. He completely buried Marcus Louis because at this stage in the game, he's not really worried about wins and losses, Marcus Louis. He's got a whole identity crisis going on. So why not just have Tyler Breeze bag him out, get over as a heel, beat him, hit him with his move, and pin him 1-2-3. It's great. It's fantastic. It's like, yes, everyone benefits from this situation. Marcus Louis in this, loved it, loved it, loved it. What was the MVP of the... Oh, actually, no, sorry. MVP comes at the end. Let's just go get the downside out of the way. I mean, like, personally for me, it was Carmella. Now, I think she's got great presence. I think she's got some really good untapped charisma there that's going to be great down the line. When it came to her wrestling, and we only saw like 40 seconds of it, man, it was indie-rific. It was basic. It didn't look good. It lacked kind of impact. And maybe it was the person she was wrestling against. But, yeah. But she didn't get to stay in the Performance Center for a while and kind of get to work on her wrestling. Who was yours?
My downside was just, and we kind of spoke about it a little bit earlier, I just felt like they should have just done something with Neville and Zayn. Maybe just a quick little promo, just kind of hyping the match a little bit during one of the breaks or something. And like I said, every week it seems like I have such a hard time finding a downside because I kind of everything on the show. But if I had to pick one, I would have preferred maybe just a little hype promo of a kind of Sami Zayn story or something, just in one of the commercial breaks or something. But, you know, like I said, I'm just nitpicking. There's no real downside this week, in my opinion. I mean, I kind of understand the Carmella thing. The only thing I had a little problem with Carmella is not really the wrestling, but kind of taking Enzo's kind of gimmick as far as talking on her way to the ring. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they should let Enzo and Cass do more of the talking. I mean, I don't have a problem with her talking a little bit, but she kind of stole his rap in a way, you know, his gimmick in some sort. So I would prefer her to kind of do a little less talking and let Enzo do more of the talking.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, that's a fair call. But like moving on to the up-and-comer of the week. My up-and-comer of the week was actually the Lucha Dragons. Now, the NXT Tag Team Champions, but obviously everyone's in NXT, so they're kind of always growing towards something bigger and better. Being the WWE main roster. But I think they've just really kind of nailed the Tag Team Championship Showcase match and just doing a great job with it. Like, these are the guys who, like, wrestle every single week. They have a competitive, good, solid TV match. And this week it was Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger, yet another tag team geek team that's just really solid and awesome, awesome combination. And they're just continually go out there and just have these really good, great matches where, wow, they look like tag team champions. And it all comes down to making Kalisto that hot tag guy. Because, Hunico, who's Sin Cara, is just a great worker, great seller, great, you know, he's a really good mechanic in that ring. Then you have the high flyer come in Kalisto, Samurai Del Sol, and just absolutely kill it. and just like show things that just are reminiscent of Rey Mysterio. I still believe that Kalisto is the next Rey Mysterio. If WWE's negotiations with Mysterio fall apart, he is the next successor to Mysterio, as far as I'm concerned. But who was your up and comer of the week, Aaron?
Up and comer of the week is Kevin Steen. I feel like Kevin Owens. He really broke out in this latest promo of his. I felt like the first one was kind of just a little taste, and we got a lot more of the backstory as far as his journey, and I like that WWE is not really shying away from that, but they're not going to act like we don't know who this is and we don't, understand or something like that. I like that they're kind of owning it and letting Steen be himself, and I like that they gave him the fight shirt, that they're kind of letting his character come over to WWE and not really changing it too much. I thought the promo was solid, great stuff. I'm really excited for his debut, and I hope that they can give him a solid, debut when he does debut.
This is it's funny you say that, because I'm moving straight to my MVP of the week, because Kevin Owens was my MVP of the week, and he hasn't even debuted yet. This promo video ticked every single box imaginable when it came to pushing and promoting an upcoming superstar. He's based in reality, because we get the whole idea that he's a family man, why he fights. He's got a family, he's got a daughter at home. We see photos of with he and his wife. He's completely humanized from the get-go. Boom. Tick that box. Then we see him as a legitimate fighter. We have shots of him, putting guys in chokeholds and suplexing them to death, while he's talking about, he loves competition. This isn't no corny bullshit stuff. This guy seems like he's a legitimate fighter. He's there to screw things up for people who want to get to the top of the business. He's all about getting to the top of the business, being the best that he can be. Again, this is no corny stereotypical wrestling promo. Well, maybe it is. Going back to the old school days, but then and then they have a complete association still with his original character that he's made famous. In ROH, the whole fight Steen fight thing. They obviously can't. They don't want the crowd to be chanting that name. Well, I guarantee you that Full Sail University at NXT Takeover is going to be chanting fight Steen fight, and they're going to be going all over Kevin Steen. But keeping that association with the ROH character is so smart, because that's what he was known for. And this is perfect. It was just the perfect video for Kevin Owens moving forward. What was your MVP to finish things off here, Aaron?
MVP of the week. This is kind of a lifetime achievement award, in a sense. I'm giving it to Tyson Kidd. I mean, as far as guy that always deliver whatever, you can put him with anybody. You can put him with Zayn, put him with Adrian Neville, put him with Finn Balor, anybody. He can always deliver a main event match, and that's why he is slowly building a little push that they're kind of giving him on the main roster, and I feel like he's earned that. And that's why I'm giving him the MVP of the week. Not so much as being the MVP of this episode, but being an MVP for NXT for so long, he's just been solid and just always putting on a good match, always putting on a solid gimmick. And I feel like he deserves this award for this episode in particular.
It's funny you say that, because this is a great tie-in to the good and the bad of SmackDown this week. It's the SmackDown review that we do every single Saturday. The first good point I want to say about SmackDown is that hope really exists in WWE when you see talent on show. And SmackDown's been doing this as of late, having at least one match where talent such as Tyson Kidd is getting that push and being a much more of a prominent figure on WWE television. For those who don't know, there was a US Heavyweight Championship Battle Royale with Rusev. Because of Rusev's inability to do the pledge on Raw, because Daniel Bryan forced him to do it, but he didn't do it. And if he said if he didn't do it, there's going to be a US Heavyweight Championship Battle Royale. So Daniel Bryan followed through with this and ended up making the Battle Royale. And of course, Tyson Kidd was in the final four of this match. And the final minutes of this Battle Royale were awesome. They showcased Swagger, Cesaro, Rusev, and Kid, and every single guy looked fantastic. It was exciting. I mean, I really feel like Tyson Kidd is getting that push and getting that a prominent role in WWE right now, because he's getting wins. He's sure it's not like he's beating lower mid card guys like Adam Rose and all that stuff, but he's winning on television. And I guarantee you, if he keeps winning and getting in prominent roles on television, fans are going to get behind the character. And he's got a real great heel, the whole Natalia, Natty's husband thing. It worked in NXT. It's going to work here on television if they just keep putting him in situations where he seems important. If he keeps winning, it makes sense, you know? And this match was just a really good showcase of the talent that is still existing in WWE, even though their characters may not be the most popular people. But and also the good of SmackDown. I thought the New Day was good. I thought it was good. It's great to see just happy-go-lucky baby faces. Just happy to be there. The music's good. I've liked the promos. It's catchy. I've got no problem with it. You know, like everyone's like, oh, they're just so overdone. Why are they in blue? I'm fine with it. Three good wrestlers, three good talents. Let's just see what they can do. Like, and of course, they'll be on Raw next week, so I'm looking forward to seeing them again. But what did you think of the New Day, Aaron? Because this is another topical issue of the week.
Well, you just said it. I mean, I just had a conversation with a buddy of mine the other day, and he goes, you know, oh, this is so dumb, and, you know, why are they doing this? I'm like, they're taking three solid talents, three solid individuals in the ring, and they're putting them together. Why are you upset about that, you know? And I understand that this stable has kind of arised, I guess, a racial discussion as far as, you know, a stereotype, and as far as, and most prominently, you know, we've seen it in the own PWP group from a couple of people that who are African American saying that this is a stereotype, that, you know, that Big E is a stereotype, you know, being a preacher. A lot of people are feeling a little, you know, they're kind of bringing the racial card into this. I can understand that. Of course, I can't speak to that because I'm white and I don't see the same way as other people. But, you know, I don't know. I like it. I feel like it's fun. I feel like it's something that people can get behind. I feel like, you know, maybe there's a little bit over the top, but that's okay. I mean, WWE's over the top. I mean, everything in WWE's over the top. So why should this be any different? I don't have a problem with it. I like their moves. I like their finishing move with the inversion of the Big E, the big ending, and Xavier Woods coming off the top. I was a little disappointed with that move as far as that's going to be their kind of finishing move. I wanted it something a little bigger and flashier, but maybe they can work towards that. I liked it as a first debut, and I liked it that it was a surprise. Like we spoke about earlier with SmackDown, I liked that it was a nice surprise that we got a debut.
Exactly right. Yeah, that was my next point. The debuts are, they should be happening more often. It was good to see, even though I think they advertised that a New Day was actually debuting next week. Obviously, plans change as they do in WWE, but that's fine. The bad of SmackDown, what was the bad points? I mean, like, really, I'm sick of dud finishes for main events again. I mean, like, Dolph Ziggler versus Luke Harper match didn't need a dud finish. I mean, like, and again, it's one of these situations. It's like, okay, you don't want Luke Harper to lose the Intercontinental Championship, but you don't want Dolph Ziggler to look weak either. So why even have this match happen? Yeah, if the match is going to end on a count out, especially if like the end game of the situation is for Dolph Ziggler to move on beyond the Intercontinental Championship and like get involved in the main event picture, don't have him associated with Luke Harper. Move Luke Harper onto another program. Like, you know, like I'm sure the matches are going to be good, and I think we're going to get a ladder match out of these two for the Intercontinental Championship. And I'm thinking that's going to be a definite show stealer. If that's the case, TLC is actually looking quite good. If with Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose in a TLC match, and Harper and Ziggler in a ladder match. But that's another heel nor there. The other thing that was really annoying me was that, as I think we mentioned before, the crowd reactions in these edited shows just feel so fake and like just so diluted of actual raw organic energy. And I think a new day kind of suffered from that a little bit as well. I hate when they try to make the crowds bigger and more into things when they're actually not as into them. That's one thing that kind of annoyed me, but that's really SmackDown. Do you have any other bad points about SmackDown before we move on, Aaron?
No, I mean, you covered it right there. The tape show kind of ruined, like we said earlier, it kind of ruins the vibe of the entire show. So you made a good point there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a problem that maybe they need to address just here and there. It's not terrible, but something that's maybe needs to be addressed later on. Okay, the matches of the week. I mean, like when we get to pay-per-views, it's kind of hard for that for the top three matches of the week to be dominated by pay-per-views. But here in this week, thank God for pay-per-views because there weren't really that many amazing matches. But Aaron, slam it out. What were your top three matches of the week?
Well, number three for me was Dean Ambrose and Luke Harper on Raw. I felt like that was a nice little match. Of course, it ended kind of, you know, funny. But, you know, I think that they kind of put together a nice match. I didn't really think it was going to be that good, and it kind of turned out pretty good for me. Number two for me was Finn Balor versus Tyson Kidd on NXT. I thought, you know, like I said earlier, really nice interaction between the two. I thought Tyson Kidd really shined and prove that he's should be a staple in NXT to put on a good match for anybody. And number one, of course, was the 5-on-5 elimination tag team match at Survivor Series. You know, from Ziggler looking good, from Sting's interaction, from, you know, just the match in general, I thought that was the match of the week.
Yeah, hands down, match of the week is definitely Tino Authority versus Team Cena on my side. Nothing even comes close to the impact that match had and everything that's there for me. Number two was Bray and Ambrose from Survivor Series. I thought that was a really well worked match. These guys just really interact with each other well. It feels different. It was a good, I'd say technical brawl, if I could say that. I mean, it was very well done, and I think these guys have something that's definitely worth seeing down the line. And I think the TLC match, as pointed out, is going to be fantastic. And Finn Balor versus Tyson Kidd is number three. I mean, we didn't really talk about Finn Balor very much, but I'll just mention it right now. I mean, I think these guys, they're making sure that these guys don't do as much that we're known for. Especially in regards to Finn Balor or Prince Devitt's career in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I think fans just need to understand that they're being taught a WWE style match. So you're not going to see all these like varied moves and ones and whatnot. And I think Tyson Kidd's kind of taught Finn Balor that in that match. So, that being said, Finn Balor looks great. Tyson Kidd is just another level of greatness right now, just within the ring, and his promos are coming along nicely, and yeah, they are the matches of the week, guys. So do check those all out. I think you can find them on YouTube somewhere if you don't have the WWE Network already. So yeah, that is the matches of the week. Now let's get straight into the podcast of the week. I think it's no surprise of what the podcast of the week is going to be, and that is Colt Cabana's exclusive 2-hour-long interview with CM Punk about what happened this January with his departure from WWE, and then obviously much deeper back into the major problems that he's had with WWE since his massive push in 2011. And Aaron, well, let's just break down the three major points of this interview because we're running a little bit low on time this week, but that's okay. Well, let's just get through what we can get through. Obviously, why he left was the major issue that was brought up straight away. And I think it's interesting that it's injuries and WWE not paying much attention to them. Obviously, within this interview, Punk brought up the point that he had a series of concussions leading to 2013 and at the start of 2014, and was pretty much treated like he pretty much just completely discredited WWE's concussion tests and said that he was still having concussion symptoms long after being quote unquote tested. And even though he made points about being still injured, the doctors and Vince just blew him off. And do you think what CM Punk's saying is true in regards to like these concussion tests being like legitimately not that good?
Well, here's the biggest point I made from this podcast. There's three, and this is a kind of a motto I kind of hold in life in general, is there are three sides to every story. There's Punk side, there's WWE side, and then there's the truth. There's no way either side sees things the same way. That's just not how it goes with life in general. You know, people that are taking his word for gospel, as far as being 100% true, are naive and gullible. As far as, well, you know, maybe all the stuff he said is true, but maybe WWE, maybe Vince, maybe Hunter, maybe the medical staff sees it a different way, or it happened differently from their point of view. So, you know, a lot of people are taking this stuff as gospel. I posted a big, long, you know, update on the PWP Facebook page as far as my stance in this article, on this podcast, and his kind of tell-all, you know, reasonings for this. And, you know, I've changed my tune a little bit. Before, I was solely behind WWE as far as, you know, his departure. I'm sympathetic toward him now. I do understand, you know, injuries happen, and maybe they didn't take care of CM Punk as they should have. But the people that are saying that he was fired from WWE, yes, of course, he was fired from WWE after he walked out. People are acting like he was just fired, like just for no reason. The man walked out of his contract. Of course, you're going to fire him. That just makes sense. After you don't show up for 3-4 months, of course you're going to be fired. So the people that are kind of freaking out saying, "Oh, he was fired," and you even see some of the TMZ posts. CM Punk, quote, "I was fired from WWE." No, you were not fired from WWE. You walked out, and then you were fired. There's a big difference.
Yes. Yeah, there is a massive difference there. It's just a very weird series of events that kind of led to Punk departing. And obviously, it's a good point that you bring up. There's always three sides to a story. But when it comes to like the way his departure, it sounded like Triple H and Vince, like he was very candid about what he was doing, and he kind of left and was given the chance to leave, and he left. And then they said that he was suspended and whatnot. And yeah, Punk definitely paints a very, very weird picture. And especially he definitely paints a picture that he is definitely the victim in this situation and a team player, as he plugs all the way through this interview about the fact that all he really wanted was a WrestleMania main event. That's all he wanted and the fact that he didn't get it, he considered his career a failure, which is it's very, very sad, because he did do some amazing things. Obviously, he didn't achieve what he wanted to achieve in regards to the WrestleMania main event, but to discredit his career on that is a bit disappointing. But it does paint the similar brush that Vince has been painted by for a long, long time, and that's the fact that, you know, like, he kind of somewhat uses and abuses talent and kind of leads them along, dangles a carrot, and maybe the WrestleMania main event was a carrot that was going to be dangled, because it sounds like there's a lot of situations in which Punk was injured, Punk was not in a mental state to kind of like come back to the business after Ryback hurt him, after he got injured by Cena, but Vince considered him, wanted him to come back and coaxed him to come back, saying that I'll owe you one, and of course, Punk interpreted that to be like, well, if I keep working my ass off and keep doing what Vince says, I'm going to be in the WrestleMania main event, especially come WrestleMania 29. And it sounds like he's also had a lot of like booking clashes with Punk, with Vince, in regards to The Shield. He said that The Shield was his idea, that he actually pitched it to John Cena. Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon considered the idea, and all of a sudden Triple H was claiming that he created The Shield, and he changed it and made it, spun it that it was his idea. A lot of situations where Punk felt oust, Aaron, and do you think, I don't know, is Punk, Punk's known to be a bit of an arrogant guy. Do you think this is all, I don't know, I don't want to say this is true or not, but what do you think about all this? Do you think WWE is always putting guys like Punk down, and a main event talent like Punk down? Is this one of the reasons why people walk around on eggshells in WWE, and we hear it all the time?
This is my biggest problem with this podcast, and I might go on for a little while here, but I feel like, you know, Punk is trying to play this sympathy card that everyone should feel bad for him. Oh, I'm sorry, Punk. You had to wrestle Undertaker at WrestleMania. Oh, I'm so sorry for you. Why don't you go tell that story to Dolph Ziggler and see how he feels about that, and see if he would like to wrestle Undertaker instead. Just the arrogance of this guy to be upset about wrestling the Undertaker at WrestleMania and then have to face Triple H at WrestleMania 30. Oh, I'm so sorry. Why don't you go talk to guys like Christian or William Regal that have been there for years and have never gotten that opportunity, but have worked their ass off just as hard and just as long. Talk to a guy like John Cena. Yes, John Cena's gotten multiple opportunities, multiple title reigns, you know, on the verge of having the most title reigns of all time. That's fine. But don't tell me John Cena doesn't work through injuries or John Cena's not injured all the time. So I understand, like I said, I am sympathetic toward, you know, the injury stuff. I understand that maybe you wanted some time off here and there. But, you know, he's got to understand, he comes across, in my opinion, very selfish in this podcast. You know, me, oh, I didn't get my WrestleMania 30, main event. Well, I left because I didn't get my main event. Like, grow up. I mean, it's like, you know, you wrestled The Undertaker at WrestleMania, big deal. Like, you wanted to be in the main event. You wanted to be, he just wanted so much. And, you know, maybe he's a proven draw. Maybe, and this is another thing right here. He kind of talked about the pay scale as far as WrestleMania 29 goes. Yes. As far as he talked about saying that he wasn't paid as much as Brock, Triple H, Taker, Rock, and Cena. Well, of course not. They're bigger stars than you, all of them. All of them are bigger draws than you. So why should you get paid more or just as much? Yes, you probably put on a better match than those other two matches, but you're not as big a draw. As much as he wants to believe people came to see him, people came to see The Rock and Cena. People came to see The Undertaker streak. You know, I have no doubt that some hardcore fans came to see CM Punk, but no offense to him, he's not as big a draw than Brock Lesnar or Triple H or Taker. That's just not the way it goes. So I just feel like he came across very selfish, very woe is me, everyone feel bad for me, and it really came across bad. And the funniest thing is he kind of talked throughout the show or throughout the podcast that he didn't want it to be a shoot interview. That's what it was. It was a shoot interview. It wasn't anything else. So he came across very hypocritical and very woe is me.
Yeah, I think that you bring up some great points. Absolutely. Like, I think it just comes down to the fact that he was never as big as, like, even though he had a following, and yes, there was times where storylines were intersected by Triple H, and especially around the 2011 time where Triple H beat CM Punk and intervened into that massive storyline and completely killed it. And like, what part did Triple H had? Yeah, there are some, listen, I'll say that there are some points in which he brings up that do have some merit. But I think at the end of the day, I think one thing is clear, and one thing that was clear by in Vince's mind is that that he was never, ever, ever a big enough star than his predecessors. And that's why he didn't get his WrestleMania main event. And whose fault's that? Is it Punk? Well, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is because, like, Punk was – he's the first person to admit he's not the easiest person to get along with. No shit. He's been like that since his whole career. And maybe if he was a little bit more of a team player and a bit more like that, he could have been a John Cena-esque kind of attraction and pushed like that. Again, he complains about the fact that he does a lot of Make-A-Wish stuff that never saw the light of day. And, it's kind of hard because it's coming out of Phil Brooks' mouth, and Phil Brooks has a definite reputation of being a bit of a dick and a bit of like a selfish, arrogant prick, and I think that's what's come out in this situation. But he does bring up some good points about the politics that have been outlined about WWE for many, many years, and like, this is just another example of those kind of situations where Vince kind of has his own perception and leads on the talent a bit. And like, you know, it's a funny thing. We'll never, ever really understand the other side of the story. That's being Vince McMahon's story. Maybe we will. Maybe we will get that side of the story, a candid view, this Monday after Raw, in this interview with Stone Cold Steve Austin. I freaking hope so, because it would definitely shine some light on his perspective of the situation, because it's definitely a hot topic. We will definitely be returning to this next week, guys and girls, because apparently Colt Cabana is coming, bringing CM Punk back to his podcast next week to answer fan questions and do another show off that. So this could be quite interesting, and I don't think it's over by a long shot. WWE issued a statement about the points that Punk brought up, and again, it's pretty candid stuff. There's a lot of heat going on right now. It's a definite topical situation. Go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. See if you agree with a lot of opinions going around about that. And also, Punk buried Ryback 6 feet under. again, check out the podcast to see what we're talking about. Yeah, very interesting podcast. A lot of different opinions coming out of it. We're going to quickly just go to the weekly weekly visit to the vault and go just very quickly through this great Sting match that, you know, obviously Sting debuted this week. I think it's worth checking out a Sting match from many years ago that's always been one of my favorite matches. And, of course, this match is none other than Ric Flair versus Sting for the World Heavyweight Championship at the Great American Bash 1990. Now, both me and Aaron were talking before we went on the air, and Aaron admitted that, you know, WCW wasn't his cup of tea growing up, or even to this day, WCW matches aren't the most watched kind of matches in the Ramadov household, which is fine. Like, I totally get that, and that's, hey, I grew up in the Attitude Era. I hated WCW. As I've grown up, though, I'm being glad that I've seen matches like the previous Flair versus Sting match at the first ever Clash of the Champions, where Ric Flair single-handedly took Sting to that next main event level. This match is this match is the final World Championship match where Sting finally got the World Heavyweight Championship from Flair. The story leading to this is a thing of beauty. It's something that you just don't see on pro wrestling that much anymore. Sting was a part of the Horsemen, was brought in by Ric Flair. It looked like Ric Flair was going to be turning babyface here because Sting was helping Flair out in certain situations. And although the Horsemen didn't like Ollie Anderson and Arn Anderson did not like Sting. Even though that was the case, Flair defended him many, many times. Then Sting became the number one contender for Ric Flair's World Heavyweight Championship. And it seemed like Ric Flair won the competition and all that stuff. And in this amazing segment that you can find on YouTube right now, Sting is kicked out of the Horsemen and blindsided by Flair at a time where it looked like Flair was actually going to stand up for him. And it's just, it's a thing of beauty. I've already told Aaron he's got to go see it. It's compulsory watching if you're a really great wrestling fan. And this is the this is the angle that sets the whole thing up. The Horsemen end up injuring Sting. He's out for many, many months. The World Heavyweight Championship match is given to Lex Luger, which he eventually loses. This all builds up to this massive match where Sting brings out the Steiners and Junkyard Dog to the ring at Great American Bash. And Ollie Anderson is attached to... Yes, Elegante, being Giant Gonzalez from WWF fame, which is a bit hokey. It's very, very WWF in that regard, but the match itself is just a thing of absolute beauty in regards to... Flair has this... It's a typical Flair match, and that is not a knock on Flair. It's fantastic. Sting's got the charisma to back it up. Just awesome, awesome stuff. Go check it out, everybody. Sting. So that's Flair versus Sting, GAB 90. Flair versus Sting, GAB 90 on YouTube if you're looking for it. It's a great match. So that we're just going to wrap everything up tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you really enjoyed the show. Aaron, as always, thank you so much for coming on. And I hope you have a good week, man.
Oh, you too. Should be good. We'll do this again next week, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Do check us out on Twitter if you want to. My Twitter handle is at Wrestling WRB for that. And Aaron, what's your Twitter handle again?
I'm at Aaron _PWP. Aaron is spelled E-R-O-N. And of course, you can follow the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Twitter page at team_PWP.
And this, as I said, tons of great content up there, guys. Well, that's it for this week, guys. And I'll catch you on the next Wrestling's Week That Was.